Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your eargasm pleasure from the fabulously fluoridated and Fukushima irradiated Island Chains Nation, and now obviously overtly surveilled Island Chains Nation of New Zealand. And it's an interesting day. We've had the GCSB bill pass. Okay, this is the NSA, as the Mexicans would say,
the NSA
of New Zealand, just basically being given whatever powers they want to spy on any New Zealanders, any emails, backdoor stuff, which they've been doing the whole frickin' time, except they've been doing it illegally, and now it's going to be legal. Now you're slaves. Good on you, New Zealand. You resisted your own slavery enough to get this legislation passed that makes you a slave. Yeah, that's basically it. And my very special guest is Neil Sanders. I believe he was in the British military and attained the rank of colonel and came up with an amazing chicken recipe. Neil, welcome to the program.
Hi. You've told my secret backstory there. Like, cheers, Vinny. Nice one.
Yeah. I'm sure you get that a lot.
Yeah, kind of. But it's fine.
Yeah, well, I'm not that creative, even at the best of times. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, bro?
Well, I'm a mind control researcher, basically. I mean, mind control sort of falls into loosely four categories. One is extraction of information, sort of truth serums and that sort of thing. The second one is wiping people's memories, you know, to prevent that sort of thing for espionage and that, you know. The third is the complete takeover of a person's mental faculties or their physicality and, you know, turning them into an assassin or a Manchurian candidate, as we would call it. And then the fourth, which is a far broader spectrum, is propaganda, perception management. And this is done through societal controls, through the media, as I'm sure you know, through trends, through entertainment, through bread and circuses, sports, all that sort of thing. And, you know, it's a very, very broad spectrum of information, really.
Yeah, I'd say so. Just exactly how many people are not under mind control would be a much easier question to ask than how many people are currently operating under mind control of some kind or another.
No, absolutely, Vinny. I mean, and you know, and that's not just talking about the sort of the sort of personal mind control. You know, the sort of hypnotic control of a person like that sort of Svengali type. People don't realize that everything is a system to make them think in a particular direction. And as you sort of pointed out, almost one of the most effective mind control techniques is the fact that people think that this sort of thing is science fiction. They don't think that this is possible. I was watching a show the other day, and you were talking about what if they brought out an anti-levity device. You said, you know, what if they brought out this device that would make everybody cry and stop them all laughing. I was watching that. I thought, I know of three people that have created devices as early as the 60s that can already do that. There's several. There's Igor Smirnov, which was a Russian guy. He was using a process called psychic acoustic correction, which is very, very sort of, it's below the natural hearing sort of spectrum, but you can still hear it. And that was one particular thing. It could affect emotion. It could put thoughts and voices into people's heads. They actually were going to employ it during the Waco siege and David Koresh. They employed Charlton Heston, the actor, and they got him to record a load of dialogue, and he was going to pretend to be God, and they were going to use this device to actually blast this into David Koresh's head and tell him to end the siege. But they decided not to do this because he said if it all goes wrong, they might slit each other's throats or something like that. So, you know,
they didn't think for a moment, you know, I wonder if this guy will click on and just go, is God Charlton Heston?
Well, you know, I think Charlton Heston would say he was. But, you know, the point is that this machine, he puts it inside your head. So it's like sort of auditory hallucinations that you might get from schizophrenia. But it actually puts these voices in your head, and they're indistinguishable from your own. You know, everyone's got a sort of inner dialogue an inner monologue.
And it broadcasts on a specific frequency, so many hertz or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Which sort of brings me on to the second guy who does that, who works on the sort of extremely low frequency waves. That's a guy called Michael Persinger. He's a biochemist at Laurentian University in Canada. And he worked on the CIA's Project Sleeping Beauty, which was a sort of CIA military crossover, again, sort of putting disconsolate and desolate feelings into people's heads and making them fall asleep on the battlefield, sleep rays, that sort of thing. And again, he was experimenting on students in Canada and was able to basically make them miserable by what it does is, you know, your brain will kick out like a pattern, like an EEG pattern. When you feel like a certain emotion, if you're happy, it's one sort of wave pattern. If you're sad, it's a different sort of wave pattern. Well, through the years, through various scientists, they've figured out what these wave patterns are. And they've basically said, if we can imitate these, put them on a microwave or an extremely low frequency wave and fire them at the brain is not able to differentiate between an organic signal and one that's actually been placed there. So it doesn't just sort of imitate that emotion. It replicates the organic processes that force that emotion, and so there's absolutely no way that you could actually go against that.
Yeah. I have uncontrollable depression. Well, I'll just turn the machine off then.
Well, yeah, quite. Right. Well, turn, you know, to move away from the telephone mast for a start.
Yeah. Well, can I ask as well, do you know if there's any sort of unintentional sort of mind control things going on? Like, we were just thinking about frequencies there. What about EMF and EMR sources that are coming off of pretty much every electronic device? I've heard that can really affect people's emotions big time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of studies officially. It's one of these things where, you know, officially the government will tell you that it's absolutely perfectly safe for your well-being, but we don't believe them, to be quite honest. So the evidence suggests that particularly being around a lot of electromagnetic spectrums, Wi-Fi, smart meters, which are being introduced into a lot of places because they essentially have mobile phone technology and the mobile phone masts and that sort of thing, they resonate on the same frequency that resonates with human bones and such like that. So there is a correlation between these things being around a person and this person having a very depressed outlook or a very It causes lethargy. There's even some sort of suggestion that it might sort of lead towards sort of things like fibromyalgia and, you know, various other stuff like that. But yeah, it's bad news, man. It's like it's basically swamping us in like a soup of electromagnetic waveforms. I mean, there's certain things like PCBs, which are sort of proven to cause cancer. But aside from that, the sort of electromagnetic spectrum that's sort of put out by these, it certainly is. It's very dangerous. I mean, in certain countries, Wi-Fi is banned in schools, for example. And we know about mobile phones. We know that they cause tumors. We know that there's... I mean, they say that they don't, but the evidence is there. I mean, you can...
They've even got it on the frickin' warning labels. Like, you look at the warning label on your cell phone and says, do not hold it within 10 millimeters or 20 millimeters of your body or something like that. How the hell am I supposed to use this frickin' thing if I can't touch it?
Exactly, man. But this comes onto like a sort of broader aspect of the mind control, which is the sort of cognitive dissonance that people get. I mean, people are locked into this sort of, for want of a better word, capitalistic society. You know, they want the gadgets, they want this, they want to be competing with idiots like the Kardashians and the Wests. You know, crikey, this is a guy that named his kid Northwest. This is not a person that is to be admired. This is not a person that, like, if there was any justice in the world...
Are you freaking serious?
Exactly, man.
I've not even heard of that.
Have you not heard that? Oh, Christ. This is how stupid these people are.
Well, see, this is how smart I am. I don't follow that kind of Shiite Muslim.
You'd better have to do that, man, to be quite honest. Because, I mean, you were talking about this the other day as well. This is the concept, the aspirational notion of society. These are structures that are meant to make you feel bad. These aren't by accident. These are thought out by organizations like Tavistock and Common Purpose and the CIA under MKUltra and various other delineations of this group, the Human Ecology Fund and stuff like that. It's not... like. Civilization has been going for thousands of years. You'd think we'd get it right by now. Like, and they have, because they know what they're doing. Like, it's just that we're too stupid to realize that basically this isn't the way that you're supposed to live. And we've got all these trinkets and dangly jewelry and stuff like this. And it would, like, people have been turned into magpies, and they're just so distracted by it that they don't see when somebody's basically... You know, someone stood behind them with their trousers down and they're convinced that it's raining.
Mm. I have this aversion to things like, have you ever heard of Honey Boo Boo?
Oh, crikey. Yeah.
Crikey.
No, yeah.
Crikey, Dick. Unbelievable. Yeah. You know, it's just like you get an obese mother who's like, southern, ridiculously retarded. And her child that she gets into these beauty pageants, and she hypes her up on a mixture of like Red Bull and frickin' Mountain Dew, and you know, it's like, have you ever looked at something, and the longer you look at it, the wider your eyes get, until the point where you're wondering if your eyeballs are gonna like pop out of your skull? It's like, do I really believe what I'm seeing? What
Absolutely.
Is going on here, bro?
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what it is, man. It's like the same as all these X Factor and, like, you know, America's Got Talent, which is like the most ridiculous title in the world. And all of these reality programs, they're there to tell you that this could be you. This could be you. You, I mean, the Honey Boo Boo thing says you don't even have to have a particular talent. You don't even have to be a person, really, and we'll give you a television show. You know, come on here and show, like, how ridiculous. And this is an extension of the sort of Jerry Springer thing that was going on in the 90s, where it was teaching people it's good to be on television, and that shame and that ridicule and whatever, like, which is afterwards, which we'll never worry about later, that's worth it for this, like, lick of this golden ring, basically. And, like, come on, man, it's ridiculous. But... The point about all these things like X Factor, Honey Boo Boo, even sports, they're what's called amusement focus. And this has been discussed even by people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, like, you know, get people together, get people in teams and get people arguing about things that are basically unimportant and, you know, set up third-party advocates, authority figures, which is like an Edward Bernays thing. People that people want to worship and follow who are essentially idiots.
You know, I was just thinking this morning, funny you should mention all this, because there's a guy in New Zealand called Bomber Bradbury, and he's a socialist kind of commentator, and he talks about some of the same stuff that I do, maybe like 5%. Yeah. And he tries to keep himself firmly within the mainstream paradigm. And, you know, sure enough, he gets on national radio. He gets on the government-owned television stations and things like that. And I was thinking to myself, you know, should I start toning myself down? Should I start acting like that so that I can get the coverage? And I was like, no. I really don't want to. The only point when I will accept the mainstream television format is if I force them to come to me, because everybody's following and watching me and nobody's watching them because they're full of crap and they know it.
Yeah, and besides which, you don't want scraps from that table. You want your own table, man.
Yeah. I can build my own table. I'm going to hammer and nails. It's called Words and Force of Verve.
Damn straight, man. Like, I mean, this is the point. And anyway, this mainstream is built on a foundation of nonsense and lies and assumptions and cognitive dissonance. And, like, you know, you see that this news media contradicts itself daily. News media makes mistakes daily. And for whatever reason, mostly because there's a thing called consensus trance, which is basically like this sort of emperor's new clothes. If we're all looking around in this, the emperor's walking around with no clothes on, the first person to mention that is going to cause such stress and trauma and embarrassment with everybody else that they're going to get probably punched in the face. And so there is this psychological process whereby people go under a sort of mass hypnosis and go along with the sort of accepted truisms of the world rather than rock the boat. Because it's better to, like, you know, it's better to be outside the tent, you know, inside the tent, like, out rather than outside the tent sing in, if you know what I mean. So the other thing is when people say, another metaphor would be to, like, say when people are clinging to the belly of a beast and they realize that this beast has not got their best interest at heart, you know, what the hell do you jump off, or do you cling even tighter for fear? And again, we mentioned, like, this is nothing new. This has been since the dawn of civilization. It's just that now it's broadcast in a different way. I mean, that's one of the main processes is, you know, New Zealand, man, do you get all these programs like Remember the 80s, Shameful Secrets of the 90s, How Crap Was Music in the 60s and all that, you know, those sorts of programs?
I don't know. Well, hold on a second. We're coming to a break, Neil. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. Back in a minute.
Uh-oh. Speedway rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you
Welcome
me?
Back.
Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Neil Sanders, and we're talking about mind control, all the various forms of mind control. I like the way that you preface this conversation that we're having with the many different types of mind control that there actually are. I was wondering, it actually bears repeating. Could you list again the different types of mind control?
Yes, certainly. I mean, with the sort of military aspect, the first one would be truth serums, the extraction of information via sort of drugs, hypnosis, or electronic means in an interrogation scenario, you know, for espionage purposes. And then the second one would be the flip side of that, which is wiping people's memories, you know, kind of like the Men in Black when they leave the service, or so that they can't, you know, creating amnesic blocks so that they can't be interrogated by the enemy. The third would be what we would loosely call Manchurian candidates, which is the control of people's thoughts or the control of people's actions. And this can be done via hypnosis, via certain drugs, and via certain electronic means, which is called psychotronics, or slow kill, soft kill, or silent kill in the industry. And then the fourth type is a very, very broad spectrum. It's perception management, the creation of norms, propaganda, and social control. And that, as I said before, it sort of runs through the whole gamut of the news media, fashion, education, entertainment, the film industry, and even industry, even sort of how you're expected to behave at work, and what would be sort of what would be an acceptable thing to do at work. For example, it's perfectly okay to destroy 1,000 people's lives or even 1,000 families' lives with the stroke of a pen by redundancies, for example, or by some sort of environmentally unsound business decision. And if you were to stand up against that and say, like, no, that's not on, then you know, the society would say, grow up. That's business. You need to, you know, you need to harden up. This is a dog eat dog world, yada 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 yada, and all that crap. And basically, I mean, that's a very basic example. But people become dehumanized in the workplace. They become so fixated on the mantras and the ideology of this broader entity, which is essentially the company that they work for, which, by the way, doesn't really exist. They're never going to come round to your house and pat you on the back and, you know, give you a back rub and tell you that you've done a really good job, okay? Your manager might tell you that, but essentially, as I say, it's this strata system. And this thing is, aside from the fact that corporations are psychopaths, as I know that you've discussed before, but that's sort of a microcosm of broader spectrums, you know. Everything, genres, if you'd want to become, I don't know, if you want to sort of attach yourself to a certain musical genre or something like that, then you can delineate yourself by wearing certain products. And so essentially you've got your individuality from a sort of mass constructed or mass marketed thing. So you've got this sort of, oxymoronical individual, and it just doesn't work.
I've got a great example here. Me and the missus were driving around and going to my sister's place, right? And we saw these three young guys in a lowered Nissan Skyline playing loud rap music, and they all were wearing hoodies and baseball caps. And we were like, do these people realize that they're a cliche? And we were like, whoa, actually... No, they don't, because they never wonder to themselves, am I a cliche?
I mean, it's inescapable to an extent, because there's no new ideas. Everybody's got sort of people that they admire, and, you know, everybody learns something from everybody else. You've got to. But there comes to a point where people are blind to it, and it comes back to this word again and again and again, or this phrase again and again and again, cognitive dissonance or consensus trance. And people just, this concept that it's like... It's like 1984. It's this double think, but it's a lot more subtle and broad spreading than double think, because it affects people. Don't actively in 1984. You know, people actively engaged in double think. They made out that they knew that this was wrong, but for the sake of the party, they went along with it or whatever. Right? Okay. People have gone past that to the point where they don't even know that they're doing it. This has now become like a reflex action. And it's kind of like a Stockholm syndrome, really. Like, I mean, I was asked by this the other day, why don't people, stand up against, why don't people realize these sort of systems of control and stuff like that? I says, have you ever heard a prostitute badmouth a pimp? Mm. No. They'll tell you that, like, yeah, you don't understand, blah de blah de blah de blah de blah. And this is due to the destruction of the ego. I mean, this, you can bring this back to us, you know, a real... tangible psychological premise. It's almost akin to schizophrenia. You've got these three concepts of the mind in Freudian. You've got the ego, the id, and the superego. The ego is essentially you, the driving force. The id is what wants to do everything, you know, the most sex, the most drugs, the most pleasure. And the superego is essentially societal controls and the mantras that you've learned from your parents, blah, 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 blah.
People have gotten to the point where they think that the ego is a bad thing, you know, and the reality is, it's actually, you know, your ego is like yourself, you know. I've got a big ego. That's why I'm a radio show host. But it doesn't mean I'm a bad person. I expose scumbaggery and I give a platform to decent people. My ego allows me to do that.
And this is, again, this is about a sort of perception management thing, because the word ego has been played as if it is, you know, from the phraseology, egotistical, or he's got a massive ego, you're too big for your boots, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's not what it means in a psychological sense, but that is the perception that is sort of the assumption that is taken up by the general population. And again, that's a very clever word thing. Words are incredibly powerful. The use of words is incredibly powerful. I'll give you an example, man. Like, may reduce the visible signs of dandruff flakes. What does that sentence actually mean?
It means it might do something that's visible, but, you know, otherwise there's no freaking guarantees at all.
Well, exactly. The word may is a weasel word, which means that basically it might do this. It might make you fly. It might not, but, you know, it might, so we'll put that on the label. The visible signs of flakes. What's the visible signs of flakes? I know what you think the visible signs of flakes are. What I think the visible signs of flakes are might be a completely different scenario. Help. What does help mean? What does help mean? It doesn't necessarily mean help you to the continuation of the end of your problem. It might just mean give you some advice. And this is these are the tricks that they're not just in advertising, they're in politics and they're in general everyday social. Here's another one. This is one that I found the other day. This particular brand of cigarettes, 100% additive-free natural tobacco. And now look on the side and it says 5 milligrams of tar, 6 milligrams of nicotine. Well, if there's no additives in it, how is that natural tobacco? I'll tell you what they mean by that. When the tobacco is grown, there's no additives added. Afterwards, obviously, when we make the cigarette, we have to put these additives in. But it's sold on the premise that this is a natural thing. And these particular cigarettes are twice as much as normal cigarettes. I mean, even the concept of natural, like, that's a selling point in a lot of foodstuffs, a lot of products. You know, this has got natural ingredients, all organic or whatever. Natural, 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 natural.
Well, see, organic doesn't even mean organic anymore. According to US food code, it's like you can have up to 10% non-organic contamination and still classify something as organic.
Well, I mean, a natural ingredient is not the same as, like, cornflakes have got natural ingredients in, but you'd never find a cornflake in nature. Like, yeah, jam has got natural ingredients.
What have they got?
You might
they got
find jam in nature.
They've got these, what they call natural sweeteners, which are an extracted or natural flavorings. That's the funny one. You know, they extract a chemical compound from a fruit, like a banana or something like that, and then they string it out, and then they artificially replicate it, and then they put it on your Fruit Loops, and they say, see, it's a natural flavoring.
Hey, because we've
synthesized it from something that really exists in nature, which means that what we're giving you ain't freaking natural.
Hey, scorpions and herpes are natural, but I don't want that on my toast, mate. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, this is the point. It's a selling point. It's based on Jungian archetypes that are there to sort of give you. There's another one that's very, very strange, is that if you've got two identical products and one has on the label with added niacin, ricin, anything, iron, anything, there's something in your brain that basically makes you want to go with the thing that seems like the better deal. Even in experiments, even after people have been told that this is a phony bone of contention, this isn't really a selling point. The other product has got the same thing, it's just labeled differently. They will still go for it. And again, this is all perturbed by a very, very disturbing thing, that it is perfectly legal for advertisers and the news media to tell outright lies.
In 2009, the Supreme Court ruled that it's legal for the mainstream news to lie to you. In New Zealand law, it's not unlawful for a politician to knowingly misrepresent their policies during an election campaign or at any other time.
Yeah, it's the same thing with advertising, and it's based on the legal premise that no reasonable person could be expected to believe that the news or advertising, or in the case of politicians, would be truthful, which is such an incredibly Alice in
Wonderland.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's such a sort of state of affairs that's beyond Brave New World, that's beyond 1984, we're in some sort of nonsensical Alice in Wonderland, smash your head against the wall sort of what the hell is going on? If that
the thing is 1984 and Brave New World were written many, many decades ago. That was the mind control techniques that they knew about then. They've been developing, they've been researching for a long freaking time to come up with even more ways to brainwash and mind control and make people hate each other and fight amongst themselves so that the elite can just basically frack all of us.
I know you've had Jan Irving on before, and he was basically talking about sort of Aldous Huxley's connections through the Century Club, and obviously he's got connections to Andreeja Puharik and all the LSD experiments and suspicious inside knowledge of MKUltra, but he was also connected to the Tavistock Institute. He was the very famous speech that he was making, you know, that in the future I don't see how a pharmacological dictatorship could ever fail, you know, the guy. That's made at the at California University. I think it was Berkeley, but I could be wrong. And it was at the behest of the Tavistock Institute. I mean, he was basically him and an MI6 agent called Michael Hollingshead, along with Frank Baron and Cord Meyer. They were the people that turned Timothy Leary onto LSD. So, and you know, this is, if you want to track this back, this is going back to the Tavistock Institute. The Tavistock Institute is one of these sort of institutes of psychological control that trains military and trains world leaders and trains business people. And that, you know, their mantra is to reduce the population to a childlike state that was called fluidity with the use of trauma from exterior points, because then basically it reduces people to like a fight or flight reflex action, so they've got to go to an authority figure for some help, essentially. And this was the premise of a guy called Kurt Lewin, who was out of the Frankfurt School, which is, again, you know, one of these other influential think tanks. It was essentially disguised as Marxist, but if you look at it, it was financed by British intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking about the conspiracy cafe idea that I had, where you have a whole lot of puns, you know, like all the meals would be named after certain conspiracies. Like you'd have some chicken Tavistock soup, you'd have a Frankfurt School hot dog, or something like that, you know. And the other concept is what I found interesting about what you're saying there is about how putting people into the fight or flight mode and then they rush to authority figures. Well, that actually stopped happening for me when I kind of lost my last job, actually quit my last job, because I suddenly realized that every time I went to an authority figure for help with anything, they would wind up betraying me and or stealing my ideas.
Crabs in a barrel, man, aren't they?
I mean, exactly. And what occurred to me was, you know what? I am my own authority figure. My fight or flight mode, therefore, made me to fly away from employment and start fighting scumbaggery. So it backfired on them, didn't it?
Yeah, good for you, man.
But that's only because I actually thought about it and had the realization about it, you know, and was watching goodness knows how many 160 documentaries or whatever inside of a couple of months, you know. So you have a geometrically massive kind of a woof, a tilt on your brain. And this is another thing: does mind control work as effectively if you're aware that you're being mind controlled?
That's a difficult one to say. Well, obviously, if you're aware of the sort of you know, the techniques and stuff. I mean, how I sort of started to get into it was because I did a degree that covered psychology and media production. And in the media production, you started to notice the overlap and the sort of the use of colors, the use of setting, the use of angles, the use of, you know, Jungian archetypes, this sort of thing. And basically how much they intertwined with particularly Freudian psychoanalysis, and how the brain will decode certain images from media as if you're psychoanalyzing it. So, like, colors are important. Like, you know, red has got certain implications, black, blue has got certain implications, and this is not, you know, only just sort of passed on to you, sort of transgress that out as well. I mean, I'll give you an example. Sleeping tablets are usually pink or blue because there's an association with softness and babies and sleep and that sort of thing. Whereas particularly strong painkillers are usually red or yellow, or very, very harsh drugs are red and black. And sort of there's a placebo effect with that as well in sort of in tests. They'll give to people identical drugs. One will be pink, one will be red, and the one that's pink will send them to sleep quicker. Or they'll be totally, both will be sugar, and they'll say, this one made me drowsy, this one made me...
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with us.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned.
Listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My guest is Neil Sanders. And, Neil, would you explain to people... there's a couple of things that you were talking about over the break. You're qualified in psychology, film and media studies, and hypnotherapy, and you've also written a couple of books. Where exactly are those books available, and what are their names, and have you got a website?
Oh, yes, I have a website, and thank you. My website is neilsandersmindcontrol.com. The two books that I've written are called Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Volume 2, I don't know if people can see this, like it's a bit, that's Volume 1. It's called Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own, Mind Control, Mass Manipulation and Perception Management. And then Volume 2 is called Marketing, Movies and Music. And Volume 1 basically discusses the sort of nuts and bolts of mind control, the Tavistock Institute, MKUltra, Manchurian Candidates, psychotronics, hypnosis, all the doctors involved, all the various different types of mind control, school shootings, serial killers, and that sort of thing. And the second one, as it says, discusses marketing, movies, music, education, the entertainment industry. And then it sort of rounds up with talking about the LSD explosion and the sort of hippie movement, which I sort of contend was a massive social experiment and sort of an extension of mind control that was done through MKUltra and also through the Tavistock Institute. And as I said, the books are available on those websites, and they're also available on David Icke's website and richplanet.net. What I was trained at university, basically, I did a degree that involved psychology and media production. And like I was saying, it became really sort of apparent that these two fields completely cross over. Like when you're sort of creating a scene or a mise-en-scene within a film, you've got to be very aware of the symbology and the colours and the presentation and the aspects of the characters and, you know, all these various things. And they're based fundamentally on Freudian psychoanalysis and Jungian archetypes. I mean, a very basic example is this. Put the camera up and I look authoritarian. I put the camera down, and all of a sudden I look like, you know, like I'm weak or whatever. And that's a very basic example. Colours, reds make you excited, blues and pinks calm you down. This is why, like, fancy restaurants have always got pastel colours or greens or earthy colours.
Have you noticed that there's not a single fast food restaurant whose colour schemes don't involve red, blue or yellow?
Exactly, absolutely. And it's because these colors excite your subconscious mind. And essentially what they do is they speed up your brain waves, your alpha. Your beta waves would speed up, so essentially you're working at a faster rate. And it's almost like a flight or flight resonance, where basically you go, right, okay, we've got to do this and get out. Other colors sort of affect people in different ways. We would say, like, you know, it's no accident that, like, very strong medicine is red or yellow or black, and sleeping pills are blue or pink because they have connotations and social connotations, but also they have reactive connotations with you know, the visual cortex and the brain. They're things that you can't actually avoid. One of the things, burgundy and like green makes you think that stuff is worth a lot more than it is. And I don't know if it's the same in New Zealand, but McDonald's is now sort of like fir green, you know, like a sort of like pine tree green or whatever. And like, it's to try and trick us that what they're shoveling out isn't poison.
And I'm Ron Burgundy.
Now, also on that note, I was just thinking about cats, and there's this brand called Whiskers, I think, and it's purple. And apparently cats just go nuts for purple. And it's the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Well, why are cat foods and dog foods, why are they advertised to look delicious for humans? Like, you know,
it's because it's the humans who buy them.
Well, quite, you know? But, you know, again, that's
the cognitive
dissonance.
The cat doesn't sit there watching TV going, meow, that looks really good for him.
And again, the, you know, listen to the language of the sort of whiskers, full of meaty jugdas, marrow bone jelly. It's got these meaty jellified chunks, or all this, you know, nonsense. It doesn't really mean anything, but it sounds like it means something, doesn't it?
Oh, oh my God, I have the perfect example. There's like it's a Tuck's Meaty Bites or something like that. I saw this ad on TV a while ago, right? And these people. They wake up early in the morning and they go, right, time to go get some Tuck's Meaty Bites. And you wake up, right, time to get some Tuck's Meaty Bites. And then neighbor comes in with a bag of this Tuck's Meaty Bites and he's like, well, why have you got that? Oh, I don't know. And it turns out that the dog was whispering it to them in their sleep, you know? The dog comes up and goes, you're just trying to get Tuck's Meaty Bites, you know? Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's like the dog mind controlling the humans, and it's very funny because you're watching the advertisement, which is a mind control for you being a human, about a dog mind controlling the human to buy the Tuck's Meaty Bites when it's just humans programming you to get your dog the Tuck's Meaty Bites.
It's Why, man? This is, I mean, two things, right? A, that's a genuine thing. That's called psychic driving, and it was practiced by a bloke called Ewan Cameron. In Canada, and you know, we could perhaps talk about that later. The second thing is that all adverts, they're based on fear. What's the point of showing these luxurious treats for your dog? It's the fear that you're not treating your dog well enough. Like, do you get lynx adverts in New Zealand? You know, they sort of spray the lynx effects, and all the birds come flocking and whatnot, and you have to beat them away with a stick that's got stuff on the end of it. And what is that actually saying? You? It's not just saying that if you spray lynx on yourself, you're going to get all these attractive girls. It's basically saying, in a more real sense, if you don't spray lynx on yourself, you're not going to get anywhere near anything like this quality of lady. And be afraid, because this is the norm. Look at this. This is what people want. And if you don't want this, there's something wrong with you. And the other thing is that basically advertisers prey on this fact that there's a schism, as we were discussing earlier, this psychological process, the superego, the ego and whatnot. There is a fundamental schism in that. Everybody wants to go out and just be pure pleasure, pure pleasure. But you understand that, A, you can't do that. B, you'll be punished for doing that. And C, you might, if you are not a psychopath, make other people feel bad for that. So there's a schism in our natural psyche. So what do advertisers do? What advertisers, politicians, news media, etc. do? They suggest that by following a certain lifestyle, by buying into a certain product, by accepting a certain ideology that you attach onto yourself, that you're going to fill that hole, that you're going to make it all right, that suddenly there's going to be some sort of understanding. If you get the house in the suburbs and the 2.4 kids in this particular car, everyone will know that you've made it and you'll feel great about yourself. And that's fine, because then you don't have to worry about life and stuff like this. That's the premise of every single product. I'll give you an example, like Adidas shell toes, right? Okay, cause some people are going, oh, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in the house and the car and whatnot. Okay, but different products have got different meanings, different social groups. Adidas shell toes, they might be associated with Run DMC. They might be associated with skateboarding. They might be associated with basketball. They might be associated purely with Adidas, the sports brand. So you've got four separate, very distinct groups of people that would consider themselves completely different from one another, that are using a talisman that has got no actual meaning to define meaning in their own lives. And again, I'm not trying to criticize people, because basically it's like criticizing people for this is like criticizing a fish for being wet. You can't, you know, like, but sometimes you've got to grow legs, evolve, and get out the pond, man.
Yeah. I was just thinking about I went to the Big Day Out quite a number of years ago, big music festival in New Zealand, right? And there was this band called the Murder Dolls. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of them.
Yeah, they're garbage.
very, very, for those of you who don't know Hurlisty, very, very hardcore and demon worshipping kind of thing, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I dedicate this to my favorite person in the whole world, the devil,
you know. And we were watching the C4 coverage of it, you know, it's like our music channels, little AMTV, when we got home, and they were going around asking all these different people what bands they were there to see. And you saw some guy with long black hair, black jeans, and a black Metallica t-shirt. Who are you here to see? Metallica. You know, and you see these two skinny, pasty kids wearing all black and that kind of thing. Who are you here to see? Murder Dolls. Wow. And
I'll put it this way, man. Like, people are easier to control, like, if you know their response to stimulus. So, for example, 14-year-old Murder Dolls fan, if you walked up to them and said, listen to this John Denver record, you know what their reaction is going to be. That's a very glib example. But if you can basically slot people into pigeonholes without their knowledge of it and sell this stuff to them as if it's uniquely for them, and as if it involves them, as if it's speaking directly to them, then you can basically coerce people. It's like explaining to sheep that this pen is just for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I know there's other people in here, but it's just for you. You're just, you know, sharing it for the time being. So this is the point. And the other point that I want to make is that that Ride the Lightning is a brilliant album. So, you know.
Well, I think my point is that people are always obsessed with things that are really freaking just BS, right?
Of course.
And their entire life is devoted to BS, and they never realize that there's any actual potential with them inside without the external BS to direct them. You know, what's my life about? My life is about that stimuli. Is really, so you don't create any stimuli yourself? You don't make any music yourself? You don't design clothes for yourself? You don't create your own businesses? You don't create your own careers? You don't create your own products? You work for somebody else, you listen to somebody else's music, you watch somebody else's television shows, you read somebody else's books, you think other people's thoughts. You don't actually have anything. You have nothing.
Yeah.
That makes you you. Everything that you think is you is somebody else. Okay? That is the crisis that we're dealing with here. A lack of faith in humanity. Not in God. Not in the politicians, but lack of faith in ourselves. We'll be right back after the break with Neil Sanders, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Welcome to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest is Neil Sanders. And so far this week has been a very random kind of a collection of guests. You know, somebody messages me or emails me and oh, Vinnie, can you get me on this show, mate? And I'll just be like, yeah, are you free tomorrow? And that's how this week has been happening. We've had some very synchronistic and relatively awesome interviews to be had, including this one, if I might be so bold, Neil. And we were talking over the break about how, what did you say? You can't reinvent the wheel. And then I brought up the example of the maglev train. And you're just like, whoa, hold on a second. You can reinvent the wheel. Here's the reinvention of the wheel never touching the frickin' ground. All right, and that's the interesting thing about human creativity, is that we're capable of creating things that other people are not even capable of even imagining, let alone actually building. It comes back to what Nikola Tesla talked about, and I think we talked about this over the break. It's 99% inspiration and 1% perspiration, because if you come up with a really brilliant idea, and I'm sure everybody listening to this show at one point in their life, if not daily, comes up with a brilliant idea, and you just go, oh my God, that's awesome. Imagine if I do this. And then you start making excuses. You say, oh, no, I'm too tired. it'll cost too much. I'll need other people to help me. And before you know it, you're 50, you're 40, 50 years old. You hate your job. Top heavy on a mortgage. Driving a car that you don't like anymore. And you don't even know your kids.
Mm.
That's what's going on here, isn't it? That's absolutely. Mind control, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to agree with you, man. Like that, basically, there is the infinite potential. You know, people can do that, but there are so many structures that basically are in place to make you believe that you can't do that, and that. One of the things is we sort of briefly touched about this before, is this concept that we're at the pinnacle of brilliance right now. Do you know what I mean? There's always this concept that we're at the anything other than today was a bit rubbish and was a bit sort of flawed, and like the 80s were a bit naff, and the 70s, oh my God, the 70s were rubbish, and the 90s, what the hell were we thinking in the 90s? Do you know what I mean? And you get all these sort of panel show programs where they mock it and stuff like that. That's sort of combined with the concept of, like we spoke about earlier, this third-party advocate, this concept of authority figures that Edward Bernays so cleverly believed would really tap into people's subconscious to give people the concept that everything prior to now was no good. That now you're the most informed and at the best time to be alive. You've got all these media aspects. There's no way that you couldn't be informed, right? Okay, and if you are, that's your own damn fault. And which is a completely nonsensical thing for two reasons. Because, A, as you were saying, there are all these systems to keep you in line, like education. Education is the best explanation of that. Because basically, how do you get a gold star? You repeat back what the teacher just told you. You don't question it. You don't go. You don't say, Newton's laws, blah de blah de blah. You don't stand up and go, well, you know, when you get to quantum physics, Newton's law goes out the window. That's why there's such things as dark matter, blah de blah de blah de blah, to make these equations fit. You don't question things. You just blindly go along with it. And again, you're told that. You are the most informed. There's no way that you could be wrong. And so when you're getting these feelings like, no, you're right, there's no way I could financially commit to doing something like that. There's no way I could reinvent the wheel. There's no way I could. There's no point forming a band. There's no point doing this. The only way I'm going to be famous is through the X Factor and stuff like that. You're absolutely right, man. These are perception management techniques based on psychological processes that are there to basically keep you in line, to keep you in this pen, to keep you in this, like this, it's like a conceptual prison. I think you're right. I think I may have misspoke. You can reinvent the wheel. It's just that essentially these things that people believe to be new and that they take on board to be the sort of the soul defining aspect of their character, they're not new. Because by definition, there's something else. And we basically made the analogy of like people put stickers all over themselves to the point where basically there's like an exoskeleton of brand loyalty and look like a race car driver. Do you know what I mean? You can tell that I'm preppy because I've got the polo shirt on, or you can tell I'm a punk because I've got the spiky hair, or you can tell that I'm studious because I've got glasses. And then this is, these are stereotypes. This come from Hollywood. But it's this point where it bleeds in and it bleeds out. We now know villains have cats. Dogs will tell you where ghosts are. Dogs will protect you from this and blah-de-blah-de-blah. You know, like the beginning of Gladiator, you've got Russell Crowe and you've got the barbarians, and both of them look kind of swarthy and whatnot. But Russell Crowe's got a dog. So we know Russell Crowe's the good guy. In Lethal Weapon, we know, crazy Mel Gibson, he's not really that crazy because the dog trusts him. So we can trust him. And again, this is the whole point. It's the symbology that spread. And this sort of these symbols, they make sort of almost like...
What about like an I Am Legend, Will Smith and his dog?
Oh yeah, well exactly. The poor guy has to put the dog down, which proves like he's nicer than we even thought before because he's making the ultimate sacrifice. I mean, exactly right. Glasses. If a character's got glasses on, they're not likely to be the sort of main protagonist in sort of violence and stuff like that. Occasionally that happens, like Tango and Cash and stuff like that. But you know that they have to quantify that by saying this guy is into classical music, or this guy is into sing. And it's, again, these associations that people are into classical music. You couldn't possibly be working class and be into classical music. No, because these are the high arts, which is nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense. But again, these things would define each other. You could get the scenario where if you were turned up to the pub and went, "Oh, I was listening to Beethoven the other day," mate. And people, "Oh, I don't want to listen to that rubbish, that Ponzi rubbish," because of their perceptions of it and your perceptions of it and their perceptions of their role in society and their perceptions of what other people will think of them, which fundamentally is unimportant, really, when it gets down to it. But you're absolutely right, man. Like, you know, there is massive human potential out there, and that is one of the keys to this thing. And that was the key to the Tavistock thing, fear. Fear to stifle people, get people like a deer in the headlights all the time, so that they don't know that
Ever since I was a young kid, I tried to make myself indefinable so that I couldn't be put into a box, you know? And as a result, I've become a walking contradiction.
Wow.
So yeah. I'm really calm and intelligent, and I yell and scream. I'm really musical and talkative, yet I can be very silent and contemplative.
Yeah.
I really love using other people's video games and watching other people's movies, but I also make my own, and so on and so forth. You know, like everything that I do, I also do the direct opposite, and as a result, I can't be defined, and it makes me unique, I believe. But then again, I'm also trying to define myself, but I don't know what the definition of what I am actually is, because I haven't yet met anybody else who's like me.
Well, you could also make the argument, and this is a circular argument, but you could also make the argument of, I see, you're defining yourself as undefinable. Very clever. That's a wonderful category to put yourself into. But, and there is a market for that. We can market that. We can sell to you these people that believe themselves to be undefinable. But again, this comes back to who defines the definitions? Who says this is up, this is down, this is what's right and what's wrong? And of course, we have to go along with certain things. Otherwise, basically, you know, people would assume you're rude. People wouldn't want to talk to you. People would say, "For crying out loud, wash yourself, man. This is crazy." Or, you know, there are certain things that we need to sort of interlock with each other. We are by nature a tribal people, and people are nice. But as I say, there's a lot of these sort of preconceptions as to what you are supposed to be in this world.
And I don't know about you, but I hate being told by people what I am. I hate being told what I think. You just think this, or you're just one of those that, you know. That's the thing that frustrates me the most out of anything, is people trying to define me, because anytime they try, they're always wrong, and I don't like it.
Well, absolutely. And again, this comes down to the language and the concept of language. People don't understand how important language is. I mean, there's this, again, psychological school of thought called constructionism. Like, there is nothing that exists without the concept of words. Like, and people say, "Oh, it's nonsense," and start banging on the table and go, "Death and tables." And the famous essay on this is called Death and Furniture, because it's like, this exists. Furniture exists. Death exists. You can't deny that. You go, all right, then how did that table get made? That table got made by people explaining through their understanding of words and their understanding of society why we need a table, what tools to use, what the tools are, how we make this, how we define that. All right, fine, I'll give you that one. But what about death? Death is death is death is death is death. All right, fine, okay. What do you mean when the brain dies? Do you mean when the heart stops? Do you mean 5 minutes after death? Do you mean we don't try and defibrillate? So even very basic aspects of our existence that we take to be fundamental constants, like furniture, like gender roles, like death, like Their concepts that have been constructed, and how do these concepts come about? They come about by psychological processes, essentially called the manufacture of consent. And so we're bringing it back to kind of people like Edward Bernays and Walter Lippmann, and these were sort of intellectuals that preyed on the they believed that the masses were a sort of a herd, that it was the elite's responsibility to control in their actions and to direct. And this can be done by the manufacturer or the engineering of consent. And this is essentially defining of norms, defining of what is accepted in society and defining what is right and what is wrong, what is a crime, what is not a crime, what is acceptable behavior in certain social situations, and what the paradigms and the boundaries of those social situations are. And Walter Lippmann basically defined this. He says, we need to define this because people see the world through pictures in their heads. Like the idea is, like, if you think gold looks like a lump of gold, yellow metal, and I find a lump of yellow metal, well, I'm going out and celebrating that. I'm getting, like, wasted because I know that I've got gold. And it's only tomorrow when I go and people go, no, it's yellow metal, Neil, you're an idiot, that my reality changes. So who paints those pictures? Who paints those pictures by which we set the stall in the natural, what we believe to be the natural processes of society? And this can, and it's the elites. And this is done through the news media, general societal constructs, and the entertainment industry. And I say a very basic one to explain is the concept of the enemy in films. I don't think it's any. I don't think it's by accident that in the mid-80s to early 90s there was a conscious shift from Russians to Arabs as the enemy in films, particularly in action films. Rambo 2, the Taliban are on the side of Rambo fighting against the Russians. True Lies, Islamic Jihad, they're blowing people up. Executive decision, and all of a sudden we've got this new concept, this new construct of villains. In the middle, for some particular reason, we had Alan Rickman and European with well-spoken Europeans with accents, as of, you know, harking back to the sort of Bond village, and like, which is another good question: why intelligentsia, or why are people that have got, you know, abstract thought being portrayed as evil? And you know, and the other thing is, you know, that's another construct of films that people don't realize. You can make you can make people root for the bad guy by that's one of the sort of established constructs of Hollywood. Give them a classy hobby. Like the Joker in the first Batman, he likes art. So it's all right because, you know, we understand that madness is akin to genius and all of this. But again, that's another construct that is sort of spat out at us. But, you know, we get these ideas, these concepts of villains, these concepts of heroines or whatever, the fool. The correct way to respond to a girlfriend. What's a romantic gesture that you can make to your girlfriend? Well, you can write a name in fire on a lawn. Like, or you can, you know, hold up a boombox and play romantic songs to her. Or you could even do something as simple as give her a rose. Like, who came up with that? Seriously, who came up with that? Here's another interesting one: diamonds. Like, you know, diamonds have got essentially no value at all. They're not a rare commodity by any stretch of the imagination.
Like, yeah, it's an inflated market.
Absolutely, because of the monopoly of the De Beers and their sales procedure. They do blind sales and basically control the entire market. And they in this, I think it was in the 20s, that it was Ayer and Company was the advertising firm, I believe, that they engaged to sort of get this concept of diamonds to be. There was no concept of a diamond engagement.
Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Exactly. The link to celebrities, because if I have a diamond that's a bit like Marilyn Monroe's, then I'm going to be a little bit like Marilyn Monroe. I can, and again, this harks back to very, very sensible things. If you show a chimpanzee, you give a chimpanzee a choice between a picture of the alpha male of the group and food, they will forego food and they will just stare at the photo of the alpha male. And people go, this is garbage. Why on earth would they do that? Because social information is important. If you can basically figure out why this guy is more successful in life than you, then you can imitate that and you can replicate that and then you can become a little bit like that. And so this is a natural instinct that advertisers prey on. And then they do this sort of shame and the jealousy thing, aside from the, like, you know, A, you want to be like Marilyn Monroe, but then they did things like suggest that if you really loved your girlfriend, you give her an engagement ring. And the more you love her, the more you'll spend.
This reminds me of the Bill Hicks sketch. If there's anybody here that's in marketing or advertising, kill yourself.
He's playing to the marketing market.
There's no joke here. Seriously, kill yourself. You are Satan's little helpers. Suck a tailpipe. Borrow a pistol from an NRA buddy. I don't care. Rid the world of your evil fracking presence. Kill yourself. Kill yourself. Kill yourself now. Oh, Bill's tapping into that anti-marketing dollar. That's a huge market. No, you evil fricking scumbags. That's not what I'm doing here. Just kill yourself.
You're absolutely straight, man, because basically the two principles that advertisers play to the most is the need to be part of a herd and fear. Fear of being excluded. And we've briefly talked about that and stuff like that. The other thing is the need to be excluded. What's the best possible... If you want to take this to the sort of hugest possible level, what's the best way that we could do that? Cults. Sell it like a cult.
Let's talk about cults after the break, because this is actually another profound interest of mine. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Public service announcement, ladies and gentlemen. The board op, Adam, who is the sole reason why American Freedom Radio is running at all at the moment. For the last 2 months, he has been doing everything. All of your shows, that your favorite hosts and everything, including myself, have been doing for the last 2 months. He has been producing all on his own, okay? And he's getting nothing for it. Nothing. He needs something to survive on, ladies and gentlemen. If you can please donate something, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, click the donate button, send him a couple of $100, I'll forward it onto his PayPal account for you. Okay, please do this, and please do this today, because, look, at the end of the day, we're all struggling. I know we all are. But if you're the sole person holding together the radio careers of like half a dozen people, near on a dozen hosts that we got on this network, and you ain't getting nothing, that's just not freaking fair. And I know how many of the people who listen to this show are good, decent, salt-of-the-earth kind of characters. You're not unsavory characters, are you? No. You're good people. So please, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, make a big donation, and tell me it's for Adam, and I'll forward it on to him, because he really, really deserves it. And unfortunately, my PayPal's dry. But I don't care. My rent this week is paid. Adam really deserves it because he's really been busting his frickin' hump for nothing. For nothing. And that's just not cool, man. Neil Sanders is my guest, and we've been having a very, what I consider to be one of these really important conversations in life. About mind control, about who you are, about are your thoughts really your own? And I'd like to, the tale of the cosmic schmuck, don't you, Neil?
No, do tell, please.
There's a guy with the initials RAW. I forget his name. I always forget his name. Why do I always forget the names of important people? Anyway, he said that the ballad of the cosmic schmuck is essentially like this. If you never question to yourself, am I the cosmic schmuck? Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. Then you'll probably become the cosmic schmuck because you never question whether or not you are one. But if you're always constantly wondering to yourself, am I actually the cosmic schmuck in all of this? then it's extremely unlikely you'll become the cosmic schmuck, because you're always self-analyzing, and you would find out whether or not you're becoming the cosmic schmuck before you actually do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, self-analysis is the lesson that I take out of that. If you're not willing to question who you are, what you're thinking, and what you're doing on a regular basis, there's nothing to stop you from becoming the cosmic schmuck.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's sad to say, but if people don't believe that psychological manipulation can put you into what is essentially a form of hypnosis, then you're already under it. That's as simple as that. This is the point. It's like the sort of platonic cave, you know, the sort of people don't understand that the world beyond the shadows, there's much more outside the cave, and they don't want to see, because as we've been talking about, there is these systems of control that keep people locked in this mindset. I mean, you know, education, all these foundations that are essentially supposed to be there to help you, education, it doesn't educate, it trains. There's a difference between teaching and training, right? Teaching is making someone understand a concept and then getting them to talk about the concept to make sure they understand it and conceptualizing off it abstract thought, okay? Training is what you do to a dog, right, okay, with a carrot and a stick. And that is essentially what the education system is. And the problem with this, the reason for this is that people like the Rockefeller Institute, even John Dewey, even, you know, the foundations, certainly the Americans' education system, said we want two classes of education. We want people who are going to learn to basically sit there for 8 hours a day and shut up and get on with it and have their lot in life. And then we're going to have another people who are going to be making decisions and stuff. And so it's no mistake that there's these different classes of school, private education, and there's the old Thai network, fraternal networks, you know, even before you get into the sort of elements of Skull and Bones and your Scroll and Key and all of these various elements and stuff like that, which and Freemasons and all of this stuff, like it's a get along to get on system. That's the sort of premise of the world. You know, people get trapped into it. But you're absolutely right. It's not fair. Good people like the guys that are doing these radio shows, you know, they don't get the support. How much should, like, the people on the audience on the BBC getting paid to spout out dribbling nonsense? How much do journalists get paid and stuff like that? And I will paraphrase it, but John Swinton, one of the most famous and most revered of American journalists, basically after he retired, toasted the press club and said, "Not a single person in here has ever printed their personal opinion. They've never told the truth. They are employed to keep the truth out of the newspaper, and anybody that broadcasts their own personal opinion would be out of a job immediately. We are intellectual prostitutes." You've got the Rockefeller Foundation basically saying, David Rockefeller is saying things like, "We are grateful to the Washington the New York Times and the Washington Post for keeping our plans out of the public
world heart. Secret, yeah because
exactly.
We would not have been able to develop our plans for the world if we were to be under the bright light of public scrutiny. But we
exactly.
believe now that the world is more sophisticated and is more likely to accept the rule of supranational bankers, which is far preferable to the auto-determination of nations practiced in previous centuries."
Hats off, man. Absolutely spot on. Like, I mean, but the way people get away with this is like we were talking about earlier, is this flattering people into sort of a contempt, into a content. Like, because we've got the internet, for God's sake, there's no way anything could escape my grasp. And people are exactly. And people are flattered into idiocy. It's like a conceptual psychological honey trap. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, 3 years later, you're like, "I've spent all this money on this girl. My God." and she's cheating on me, like, or whatever. But that's the concept. This is the thing. It's this constant pay on, pay on, pay on, pay on. You're going to get paid for it. You're going to get it in the end and stuff like that. I mean, that's even
I hate the people who are trying to climb the corporate ladder and just and be like, you know, if I just work in this for so many years, I'll get to this job, I'll get to that level, I'll be able to then change things, I'll be able to then help people and that kind of thing. But in the meantime, I'll just be a slave and do what I'm told and frack people over and do the sales job and so on and so forth. You're never going to get to the top rung of the ladder to decision make if you're a good person. The reason why they put you through these hoops to jump through is to corrupt your mind, to stop you being the great, wonderful, independent, capable person that you are. That's why there's a structure for you to follow.
Even if you did get to the top of a structure, let's take a very extreme example, a very evil entity, the Nazi Party. Do you think if Martin Bormann or even Joseph Goebbels or even Hitler turned up on a Monday morning and went, you know what, lads, I've been thinking about this. It's a bit bloody strong, isn't it? Maybe we should tone it down a bit. Do you think they'd go, yeah, you're right, absolutely, you're right? Or do you think they'd go, shut up, sit down, get on with your job? Of course they wouldn't. Like, this is the point. It's... And nobody would ever dream of doing that. Once you get into that center circle, I don't care what your ambition was at the start, you're not going to do it. You're just not going to do it. Like, if you, like, you could
all
create
your efforts
some...
would be for nothing. You'd just be
absolutely
cast off of Mount Olympus.
Well, you just wouldn't, you'd realize by that time, and it's this horribly, it comes down to, again, truisms. If you're a rebel when you're 20, if you're not a rebel when you're 20, you're a more, an idiot. But if you're a rebel when you're 20, like, you're perfectly sensible. But if you're not, like, mainstream by the time you're 30, then you've got no brain. Oh, sorry. If you're not a rebel before you're 30, you've got no soul. If you're not a rebel after you're 30, you've got no brain. Bullshit. That's absolutely not true. This is another truism that's put out there to go, you know what, yeah, you're absolutely right. I've got to act like a grown-up now, you know, because now these societal roles are there. I can't certainly do that. I can't make fun of this. I can't blah-de-blah. I can't have a laugh anymore. I've got responsibilities in life. Oh, my God, it's so depressing. And... it's like we were talking about earlier, like this concept of, like, yes, you can reinvent the wheel, but most people would turn around to you and say, oh, lovely, Vinny, when have I got the time to reinvent? I've got kids, I've got a mortgage, I've got this, I've got this, I've got this. And aside from that, you've got all these other hidden second nature things that you don't realize are preying on you, like keeping up with your neighbors, like providing for your kids, like... You know, if I don't take my kids on 3 holidays a year, I'm a bad person. It's not true.
Yeah, well, think about this. Are you saying to me, Mr. Person who says, I've got kids, I've got a mortgage and such and blah, 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 are you saying to me that nobody who has kids or has a house has ever invented or anything or ever changed the world for the better? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, quite. I'm with you, man. Like, I'm totally with you. But this is exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about breaking down these fundamental concepts that are considered to be real. Like, it's not real. None of this is real. These affiliations, they're tricks. They're psychological tricks. They're like sleight of hand movements by a grand magician. And this is the reason. You're absolutely right, man. Like, people need to basically go, hang on, this doesn't ring true to me. Again, you want to bring it back to, like, a Bill Hicks example. Everyone's saying this is great. I'm looking at it and going, oh, it's a piece of shit. It's, you know, a piece of shiite. Like, that's the point. You're right. You're absolutely right. Everybody who's watching this has made the decision to go, you know what, there's something other than the mainstream. So you're right. You're absolutely right. And it's not, I would say, it's not a criticism of people. It's just basically you've got to explain the understanding of things. You explain to somebody how an arm lock works, and then they can get out of that arm lock. Do you know what I mean? This is the premise. This isn't an elitist thing to you know, slag people off or anything like that. It's like you were saying earlier. I like Metallica. Like, I don't like the Murder Dolls, but I like Metallica. I like, you know, all sorts of punk and rap and hip-hop and stuff that I know is garbage. It's perfectly okay. I'm sat here drinking a beer. That's fine. You're all right to do these things. It's not... You don't have to be a monk. It's just to understand that this isn't everything that there is. And, you know, basically, the key to rising above it, I suppose, is basically understanding how to. You know, if nobody's shown you how to walk, you can't. So this is the thing, you know, we can all come together and go, have you noticed this? Have you noticed this? Have you noticed this? Then, you know, we all learn and we can move forward, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's more important to you? What's more important is understanding who you are, what your life is about, and what your real purpose is. Is that more important to you, or is doing what other people expect of you, doing what society tells you, obeying and thinking what you're told to think, is that more important to you? Is being accepted more important than being exceptional?
Well, I mean, and that is the fundamental crux of it. That is the psychological argument or the psychological problem that is presented in every case of advertising, in every case of tribalistic instinct, and that can go to entertainment, as I say, sports teams, that can go to your class at school, that can go to your group of friends. Nobody wants to look foolish in front of people, and that is the fundamental schism in the world that people prey on, because there is no right answer. It's a little bit of it's a gray area, because you'd be a fool to isolate yourself totally from the entirety of the planet, because you would never you'd die if you didn't have a mother or a father, body. Even if you got to a certain age and went off, somebody hadn't taught you how to grow food, etc., etc., cook, etc. So this is the point. We need people. We do need people. But that aspect of it is totally it's totally magnified to the point where people feel frightened to be anything other than a huge conglomerate mass. You know, and again, this is very real. This isn't airy fairy. Oh, be fair, be yourself. You know, it's not hippie shit. This is like psychological processes. People like Gustav Le Bon, and people have talked about the concept of hypnotic notions of crowds. There's a concept called de-individuation, whereby basically, if you get into a crowd, you would act in a way that perhaps you wouldn't act normally. Like, you know, in a riot situation or at a rock concert or something like that, you might go crazy because everybody else is going crazy. And it's likened in instinctual psychological processes like a big shoal of fish.
One of my favorite moments was at the Big Day Out. I think it might have been 2006 or whatever. Rage Against the Machine. 20,000 people with fists in the air screaming, "Frack you, I won't do what you tell me." Made me feel really good, because I really believed in it at the time. Unfortunately, we're coming to break, Neil. Final segment coming up. Seems like too short already. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. As Jimi Hendrix would say, there must be some kind of way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. And I do like to tell a lot of jokes on this show and also steal other people's comedy acts. Now, my very special guest is Neil Sanders. And Neil, you've got a 5-minute monologue for us, or something of that nature.
Well, kind of. I mean, like, as I say, I've not been on this show before, and I'm very flattered and honoured to be on here. So I thought, you know, let's talk about the sort of things that got me interested in this whole caper. And what I'm talking about really is mind control, MK Ultra, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with it as a concept. MK Ultra is the umbrella term. It was started in 1953, but there were previous projects before that. And essentially the point of MKUltra was to create a Manchurian candidate, somebody that could be used as a spy or an assassin, somebody that would be able to... If anybody's unfamiliar with the film The Manchurian Candidate, you might have seen Zoolander, or you might have seen The Naked Gun. like, that's the concept, turning somebody into an assassin that they don't know about this. And this is, again, it sounds like science fiction, but if you want to read my book, or there's numerous other ways you can find out that this is very real, and it was done through hypnosis, it was done through trauma, it was done through drugs, and it was done through various electronic means. But the film that actually got me onto it was a film that was released in 1962 called The Manchurian Candidate, and a lot of people may have seen this. It was based on a book that was written in 1959 of the same name, and it starred Frank Sinatra and Angela Lansbury. And in this, a man is hypnotically controlled by Chinese agents from Manchuria, and he is then utilized to assassinate a presidential candidate. It doesn't go quite right for him, but that's, you know, watch the film. It's a very, very good film. And I was very interested in this and started looking into the reality of MKUltra and stuff like that. But the other thing that I'm interested in is the sort of tangential connections to this. And one of them is starting with Frank Sinatra. I mean, Frank Sinatra obviously is the star of this film. People might not know. Frank Sinatra was married at one time to Mia Farrow. Mia Farrow was obviously in the film by Roman Polanski, which is called Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby was filmed at the Dakota Building in New York. The Dakota Building was where John Lennon was murdered. John Lennon was murdered by a gentleman called, he was supposedly murdered by a gentleman called Mark Chapman. He was probably murdered actually by a gentleman called Jose Podermo, who we'll come back to later. But Mark Chapman was almost certainly under what we would term MKUltra mind control, and he was what we would call a Manchurian candidate. He stood there and fired the gun. The gun probably contained blanks, as the wounds to Lennon were on the other side of him. But it was very similar to a gentleman called Sirhan Sirhan, who assassinated Robert Kennedy, and we will briefly come back to him later. Frank Sinatra was also friends with the Kennedys. He was friends with JFK, and he was friends with Robert Kennedy. He was also friends with Peter Lawford, who was the Kennedy's brother, and the influential Rat Pack, which also contained Dean Martin. Now, what was interesting was that Sinatra was he was connected to the Mafia very, very heavily. The Mafia were connected with drugs like LSD and the spreading of certain drugs like crack cocaine and other things like that, which are sort of societal mind control things. In The Godfather, there's the character called Johnny, I forget his name, I'm terribly sorry, but basically they make an offer that they can't refuse. They go to the film producer and say, he's in this film or you're dead. And he doesn't take this seriously, so they put a horse's head in his bed. This was based on a real incident that involved Frank Sinatra, and the film was From Here to Eternity. He was the character, and his mafia godfather basically went to the producers of the film and said, no, you do this, and that's it. The connections to sort of Hollywood and the Mafia are very, 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 very sort of strong. Sinatra's hairdresser, or more realistically, the person that actually put on his toupee, was a gentleman called Jay Sebring. Jay Sebring was one of the people that was murdered in the Tate murders by the so-called Charles Manson family. We don't have time to go into it, but like, there's a whole other story with that one going on. Jay Sebring was a drug dealer. Jay Sebring dealt cocaine directly to Marilyn Monroe, who was most likely a presidential model MKUltra sex slave utilized by the Kennedys and the Mafia and various other people. And he also dealt drugs directly to the Kennedys. His friend Peter Lawford, who was also buying drugs from him at the time, was also providing prostitutes for the Kennedys. Another tangential connection to the film The Manchurian Candidate is Angela Lansbury. Angela Lansbury in the film plays the woman that is basically utilizing the hypnosis to get her son to kill people. Her daughter, unknown to a lot of people, her name was Deirdre Lansbury, or Dee Dee Lansbury. She was given a signed, personalized note, because she was underage at the time, to go and live with the Manson family. The Manson family that killed Jay Sebring, the friend of Frank Sinatra. Dee Dee Lansbury was not the only person that the Manson family were on very, very good friends terms with. The Dennis Wilson is obviously the one that people know. Charles Manson wrote at least two songs that appeared on the 2020 Beach Boys album. The Beach Boys, by the way, were almost certainly under MKUltra control. If you know anything about the background of Brian Wilson and the trauma that he went under, and his incredible musical talent, then, you know, these sorts of things start to appear. Their manager, Nick Grillo, was also connected to the Mafia, and Brother Records was used as a laundering foundation for Mafia money in the movement of LSD, which was recently made illegal as a mind control project. One of the people that Charles Manson knew very well was Mama Cass. Mama Cass introduced him to the actor Michael Caine at Elvis Presley's house. Not only did he know Elvis Presley and the Doors, but Neil Young also basically tried to get Charles Manson and Bobby Beausoleil a record contract with Mo Austin of Warner Brothers Records. This was unnecessary as they already had a record contract with Brother Records. So those are the sort of tangential connections to Mind Control. We could also go into Sirhan Sirhan, who was almost certainly under Mind Control and was the murderer of, or was the apparent murderer of... Robert Kennedy. Would appear that actually guy was a guy called Eugene Caesar, who was stood behind Robert Kennedy and had a gun of exactly the same caliber as the wounds, but was never questioned and had connections to intelligence agencies. So those are the connections to the Manchurian Candidate. But so, where do we get the concept of Manchurian Candidate? Because this film didn't just come from anywhere. This came from the concept of Soviet and Chinese or Korean brainwashing, and this came out of the Korean War, supposedly came out of the Korean War. Numerous US Marines were basically admitting to various war crimes and then denouncing the American regime and saying that they were actually going to become communists, and people couldn't believe this. There was a previous show trials involving people like Cardinal Metzger and stuff like that, which also sort of threw a spanner in the works, and people were thinking these people are under hypnotic control. It transpired that this was not true. These GIs had actually been told to admit everything, to admit to the war crimes, because nobody would believe them. And later this could be used as an excuse for mind control. They were also told to renounce their American citizenship and go along with the communists. This would be then used later as an excuse for American entry into mind control. The concept that basically China was and Soviet people were mind controlling people came from a book called Brainwashing in Red China. Brainwashing in Red China was written by Howard E. Hunt. Howard E. Hunt was a CIA agent and one of the Watergate burglars. He basically came up with the name brainwashing. It comes from a Chinese term, sai nao, which means to cleanse the mind. It was going to be called menticide, which is Latin for control of the brain or killing the brain or murder of the brain. I forget exactly, sorry. But they decided that a more human term would be far better. One of Howard Hunt's associates in the Watergate burglary was Frank Sturgis. Frank Sturgis worked with Jose Podermo for over 10 years. Jose Podermo was an anti-Castro CIA agent that just so happened to be the doorman on duty on at the night that John Lennon was murdered, supposedly by Mark Chapman. And so we see that all these things are basically tangentially connected. And so, I just thought perhaps people might like that. There's huge, obviously, other strands that go off. You know, Manson is a whole other story. We've not really even touched on anything to do with MKUltra. But hopefully that gives people sort of a taster of the webs that are spun, basically.
Yeah. And as South Park would say, mind control is bad, MKUltra. And I do understand that there is so many tangentiary connections. And when I explain to people something like, if I just mention the word MKUltra and you try to explain it, they start to think that you're a little bit nuts because you're mentioning all these different things that are connected by disparate connections. The fact of the matter is, you're not educated enough to understand what I'm talking about, okay? If you were an ape and I started to try and explain to you physics or electrons, protons, neurons, morons, that kind of thing, you wouldn't have any freaking idea what I was talking about. And you'd go like, and try and beat me over the head with a banana, okay? Yeah. This is how dumbed down we have all become. This is how uneducated we all are. And that's why, you know, shows like this have now gained a following, because people have realized, oh, my God, I really am a lot dumber than I thought I was, and it's time to get myself freaking educated, right? And it takes a long time, okay? How long did it take you to get indoctrinated, ladies and gentlemen? What did you do? You went to your kindergarten, which was originally a German concept after they outlawed homeschooling so they can get all the kids in and indoctrinate them to love the dear leader. Hmm? And then you go into primary school, the elementary, whatever, high school. And then after that, you go into your university. Maybe you do even further university study. You wind up getting a PhD. So you got, like, what, 25 years or so of mind control being practiced upon you. And that's just the education system, not including all of the other stuff that you have to absorb through mainstream media, your politicians, the medical industry, and so on and so forth. And you think that for some reason, somebody explaining to you something in 30 seconds or 60 seconds is somehow going to undo all of that? It takes years. Many, many years of deep thinking, hardcore studying, and a shockingly large amount of listening before you realize just how indoctrinated you truly were. Neil, can you please rattle off your website? We've got about 5 seconds.
Yeah, sure. It's neilsandersmindcontrol.com. And I'm also on Facebook if anyone wants to like me on Facebook.
neilsandersmindcontrol.com. We'll see you again.